podcast in the world. From WWE to DNA Impact, by way of the NWA, it's time for Reffin' It Up with legendary referee Brian Heppner and guest host, Mr. Reffin' Rant himself, Jimmy Corderas. An all-new episode starts in... This is Reffin' It Up.
Welcome back to Reffin' It Up. I am RJ. I am joined by the two greatest professional referees of all time. First and foremost, from the Great White North, he's probably parkering just a little bit because the Leafs are almost about to be eliminated from the playoffs yet again, Mr. Jimmy Corderas. He's clanging, he's banging, he's strutting, he's cutting, Mr. Brian Heppner. But first, Jimmy, man, I don't know. I think it's not an NHL season until the Leafs get officially eliminated from the playoffs.
Wait, Jimmy. Who cares about hockey right now? Are you getting any sun at this point? Because your weather for the last 8 months has been talking about nothing but snow. Please tell me you're getting that little nice bald round and some sun.
It is getting some sun. I've actually cut the grass once already, and it's due for another one.
Wow.
The only reason
I've done it twice.
Yeah, there you go. We're not too far apart when you're up there in Rochester, down there in Rochester. Yeah. Well, kind of sideways in Rochester, let's put it that way. But it's been raining a lot. That's the only reason the grass hasn't been cut. But tomorrow, if it's nice, guess what? It's getting a trim. I could use one too, but you can't tell. You know.
That is so good, Jimmy. I am so happy for you. I actually get depressed for both you guys with this rotten ass weather y'all always report every single week. I'm glad the sun is peeking out and you're actually going to see how it really lives to live in God's country. You know what I mean? But anyway, guys, I'm so super stacked about, and I just don't know what to do. I've been very, very excited for a while. I have had, if those of you who don't know, we have Matt Camp on this week, and I have had this in my mind for a while, and it finally came to fruition, and we can talk about that too, how it did, and all kinds of things. But anyway, I'm really excited about today. So awesome stuff.
So, Brian, why do we do this? I got a little bit of an idea. I don't have many ideas, but when I do, I like to announce them.
Oh, shit.
I know you should be scared.
Here we go.
why don't we do this? We got Matt Kemp. He officially came into the green room. He's actually snacking on some busted open Skittles in the waiting room. We got a brand new waiting room. Interns, all that good stuff are waiting on him hand and foot. So, why don't we send it up to our first count and bring him in right away? Do a little something different.
Hey, RJ, before we send it up, I mean, thank God he got busted open's green room stuff because he'd had like some fucking stale ass pretzels on ours. So, woo.
I'm sure he at least knows where the free beer is and like somebody.
Hey, Brian. Man.
I was looking for the Slim Jims. I didn't know where they were, man.
Well, let's get it up. Let's get him in here.
Let's get him in here. Let's send it up for our first count. We'll be right back.
This is your one count.
We are back with our first count. I am honored to welcome in the premier in wrestling analyst, the one, the only, fresh off his debut on Busted Open Radio, Mr. Matt Camp. Matt, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thanks, guys, for having me. Very hard to follow Lawn Talk with Jimmy, but I'm going to try and do so here. Maybe you can get a little sponsorship for that green room, little green thumb. But I appreciate having me. Very nice introduction, and good to be with you guys, two of my absolute favorites. And RJ, you too. Brian just told me I had to say that.
it's in his contract. He just doesn't see it. He's got to read the fine print there. He's got to at least give me one compliment at least once a show. So
I hate to do this, RJ, because I don't like correcting anybody. But let me just make sure here, Matt. It's kind of like a re-debut for you on Busted Open, is it not?
That is true. I was there in 2018 and 2019 in a similar role. Literally the week until I started with WWE. I remember me and Bubba covered Hangman and Jericho. So I got to cover one AEW show kind of in the media before I went to WWE. So it's good to be talking about all wrestling, which, by the way, I never stopped watching everything. I still keep up on everything because it's kind of just stuck in me. I think you guys understand that.
Oh, now I want to do this. I want to do this before we keep going forward, before we jump into the first count. For all of our listeners that don't know, Matt, give them a little background of yourself, because I don't want to get to your history of you, because you know what? You're so good at doing what you do, and I just want to get this out of the way. So just explain to our viewers and listeners, we don't have viewers. Explain to our listeners who you are, what you are, where you came from, and all that stuff.
Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity to do so. So I'm a wrestling fan. My first match I remember watching was Warrior Hogan at WrestleMania 6, title for title. But WrestleMania 7 was the first pay-per-view I watched front to back. And I have been a fan ever since. I watched everything. I don't know if you guys are like this. I found the internet very quickly in wrestling, and that kind of shaped my brain, but in a good way. And I got to learn a little bit more about everything that was going on, and took my career from NFL Films as an intern. I worked for a sports production site, literally just bringing in highlights. I worked for a fantasy football site subscription for years. I ended up on Sirius XM, which is actually my introduction professionally into wrestling, because I was friends with Matt Morgan. I was friends with Jeff Jarrett. And those two guys actually, along with Brian, kind of got me in at TNA. And the first person I met at a TNA house show was actually Brian. And Earl came back ranting and raving and dropping about 47 F-bombs because of something happened with his gimmick, and they couldn't get the, you know, this your Hebner shirts, which always used to sell out all the time, as they should. Couldn't get enough out there at the rec center in like Rahway, New Jersey. And then Brian's like, all right, thanks, Dad. This is Matt. Nice to meet you. Hey, how the fuck are you? Like, that's how it was. And and then I've been friends with Earl ever since. And I was around TNA and was doing the radio show on Sirius. And a lot of the guys in the locker room listened to the show. And I was giving out fantasy advice. And Brian invited me down to a show. I went down in Orlando, I think like 2010. I was down for like a Genesis weekend and stuck around. And I started popping in. I loved being around it. Admittedly, I think I was worst kept secret. I wanted to do something in wrestling and work there. And I helped out where I could. And I met Dreamer through that. He came on my show, and I was still doing fantasy football stuff. I moved on to Bleacher Report and was their lead fantasy analyst there. But I loved football. I still do. But I always still wanted to do wrestling stuff. And when I was at Bleacher Report, they would have little, you know, oh, hey, we're doing Mania. Can you do? Sure. Whatever I could do. So I was doing more with that. And along the way, I got on Busted Open, and Dreamer had lost Vic Joseph to WWE. And I had been going to the shows, and I knew Vic, and I knew Tommy, and Tommy, I knew the job was open. There was a play-by-play gig for House of Hardcore, which Dreamer was having a lot of success with at the time. And I had not done play-by-play, and he's like, hey, do you want to be my host? And I just kind of took the ball and ran. And this is when Flow Slam was around, and Tommy signed one of the first wrestling Twitch deals. So we were on, you know, which was pretty cool, and I'm getting my feet wet. And you guys know the indies. There's ups, there's downs, there's things that are good. It's the best way to learn. I learned from Tommy and Bubba and, you know, everybody I would encounter. I like to tell this story. My second match I ever called was in the ECW arena. And Matt and Jeff Hardy had just returned to WWE with Broken Matt, and they won the tag titles at WrestleMania. So the night before, Matt is advertised for House of Hardcore, and he can't really work. Like, he could show up, but he couldn't do anything physical. So Tommy's got to work his way around it, and it, like, became a big story on the internet, like, that he showed up, but they pulled a bait and switch. So the next night, it's supposed to be Matt and Jeff against Tommy and Bully. That's the main event. 1,500. It was sold out. Like, Matt and Jeff being back on Raw sold a bunch of tickets. Tommy knows he can't put them in the ring. And Tommy decides, I got to pull something out of my butt. He books the Young Bucks to travel from PWG the night before to fly cross-country red-eye to come in. And I believe Matt or Nick got a stomach flu. Tommy is out of a main event completely with a sold-out ECW arena. Oh, wow. With his arena role, you know, the company was doing well. And he makes a couple of calls to higher-ups in WWE, two of which don't work there anymore, Vince and Carano. And, like, he went right over Carano and was basically like, listen, my main event's screwed. Like, and Triple H on the email was like, hey, man, what's going on? What can we do? Tommy's like, listen, I don't have a main event. Like, I get it. You got Matt. What are you guys going to do? Any of that ECW bullshit? No. Like, they're going to be fine. And they let him work. But nobody thought the Hardys were working. That whole crowd knew, hey, they can't work. Like, they're not making any in-ring stuff. So Tommy plays it off beautifully, comes out at the beginning of the show, does like a House of Hardcore dress of, you know, hey, I know things are going to change. Just hang in there with me. So he comes out, and Bully comes out, and the Spirit Squad comes out. And they're booed out of the building, and they look like the team. And, oh, God. And as at the right time, I mean, they are pissed. And then the Hardys come out, and the place goes nuts. And they acknowledge the elephant in the room, like, you guys can't wrestle. And Matt's like, yes, we can. Forget Meek Mahan. And they go out there, and they have a 10-minute match. Place goes nuts. I don't think there was a single bump in the entire match, and nobody cared. Wow. And that, you know, Spirit Squad came back out. There was, you know, I think Jeff did the Swanton, but they went through the tables. The four of them all celebrated. If anything goes wrong with Raw, I'll be back, Thomas Two Dreams. And that was it. And it was such a masterclass for me. It was the second show I had ever called. And I'm in the ECW arena, a place that, you know, I used to go to Philly wrestling all the time. And I watched Tommy figure it out. And I watched how a promoter had to figure things out and then had to play with the crowd and had to make sure he didn't have to refund a lot of people on that night. And I watched how everybody played their part so beautifully. And I went, none of these people cared that one bump happened in this match. I learned so much going up and down the road. Danny Doring, Daniel Morrison, one half of the final ECW Tag Team Champions. I think I was hooked. And there was a funny story from that night, and I know I'm going on long. There was doing a convention with that one. So Tommy would go, I'm going to go shopping. And whoever was in town, let me get Dan Severn. He can accompany Jeff Cobb out here. I'll give him $500. You know, so he'd go pick people out. And Christian, who was not back in the ring yet, was working the convention, and he came to see Matt Hardy. So we're doing the second match, and Tommy had gotten Steamboat to be on the show. Just a little appearance. So the friggin' Ricky the Dragon Steamboat staying a 5 feet from me doing an angle. And he goes out to the ring, and I'm trying to call this. And Christian comes up behind me, and Jay goes, hey, man, you know where I get a water? Like, I'm on the air. Like, the cans are on. I am calling the show. And I'm like, we're not. And I just, like, reach under and pull. I'm like, here, like. And I just keep going. I was like, all right, I have been through a lot in 2 days of calling this. And I, you know, I had a whole new love and appreciation and a learning experience. And then a few years later, I met Tom Phillips. He kind of got me in the door at WWE. He was like, hey, I'll put you over, but this is the job. And it was a digital job. And, you know, I started on the digital side, which is very different from the TV side. Not as much synergy as there is now. And I did that show, The Bump. I did every single episode. For the day we started to the day I was gone, I didn't miss a single episode from COVID to vacation. I mean, I'm very proud of that. And I got to do Raw Talk and SmackDown Lowdown and kickoff stuff. And they let me go try some commentary down in Orlando at Level Up. And I interviewed everybody who's everybody. And it's funny how you look at them differently when you sit down next to them. And all of that experience has brought me back to Busted Open. And now I come talking to you guys. And it's fun having conversations now, knowing your expertise and your, you know, experience level. And I get to bring like a little of that now. I feel like I'm, you know, a little bit closer to what you guys have done, and I could speak differently. And I certainly have a different appreciation of the business than over the last 5, 6, 7 years.
Ladies and gentlemen, Matt Camp.
Yeah,
there you go. That's an awesome story. And you brought up the thing with the Hardy Boys coming back to face Tommy Dreamer and Bubba in the ECW arena. And the beauty of it is that's the magic. Everybody thinks that the big thing today, and I'm going to get it in, boys, because I got to get it in every week. They want to see twisting, burning 450 hammer Phoenix splashes that everybody kicks out of at two. They think that's the magic. That's not the magic. That's giving away the magic. The magic is where you can have a match like that. You have one bump and the whole place go banana, as Pat Patterson used to say. And there's a difference between, that's what I love about Tommy and Bully when I listen to their minds go. There's a difference between a booker and someone who is a promoter. A promoter just hires talent and that sort of thing. But a booker can put stories together, can call it on the fly, like you just said, call it out there. Eddie Guerrero was magic at that in the ring, by the way. And you know that, Brian. He was just a master class at that. And that's what I love about that story, Matt. It just, I love it.
I have no issue with Matt Hardy whatsoever. Do you remember all those broken Matt Hardy matches? Remember all those classics?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Pre-taped though. I'm saying those no, unbelievable, but you know what I'm saying? Like, who cares? Like the night before, people wanted to see him in the gimmick with the Raw Tag Team title, and they got a picture at a rec center in central New Jersey. No, the match didn't matter. The match, very rarely does the pinnacle of a match be the crescendo of an angle. You'd like it to be. You'd like it to be. You want to have that WrestleMania crescendo. But there's so many TV shows now that the talking is going to get you there. CM Punk is staying active in WWE television right now because he could put a microphone in his hand. I don't care about CM Punk wrestling. I have no interest in seeing Punk be a little bit slower than he used to be. He'll make it count when he gets in there with McIntyre. Drew McIntyre is doing the best stuff of his career, not because he's wrestling right now, because he's going toe-to-toe with CM Punk and doing the modern-day promo on social media. He has figured that out. That will take you so much further than any match, and there's room for that stuff. There's room for variety, but the money's always going to be in the mic, and I think that's what drives me nuts when I see so many indie shows these days, and I don't see people promoting the shows the right way, because Matt, you're going to make your money on the mic.
Matt, you transitioned into something that you didn't want to see him wrestle. There's something I don't want to see anymore, and that's a WWE draft, okay? It was the worst thing I've ever seen, and I have tried to, and I'm hoping you, that's why you're on here, and Jimmy, can please tell me something good about this. Guys are getting drafted and staying on the same brand. Well, then you're not drafting, and I have been saying it, Jimmy and RJ will back this up for years. It can't be more than two because we've only been in existence for two. Stop calling it a draft. It's not a draft. It's a replacement of people in different shows, or it's I don't know the word. It's shuffling, but this is not a draft, and they do it horribly, horribly. I'm not entertained. I did everything I could to try and watch Monday. I just couldn't. It's please, one of you. There's three of you on this fucking show. Can three of you give me something positive? Fuck, because I can't.
Can I try at least here and
try?
Give please. It a shot. I appreciate the fact that they're going into this draft that they said, okay, you can draft people from your own brand as a strategy to keep them on your own brand. I get it. But if you want to do that, the better idea, in my opinion, this is just for me, is make everyone non-brand affiliated. Everyone's up for grabs. And then when you draft someone who's already on your brand, it makes sense. As opposed to, yes, you know, Jimmy, and when you do it, sorry, Brian, I don't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good.
And when you do it like they did with that WrestleMania kickoff show. Make it a special one-time event separate from the Raw show, separate from SmackDown, separate from any other show, and have it, this is our draft. Do it like the NFL draft and have the war rooms, have all the guys there ready to go.
Jimmy, they can do this. I said the same thing over the weekend on Busted Open. Why can't the WWE... only a couple weeks away from WrestleMania, a weird way to do it anyway, and to go up against the NFL draft, you have a perform. You put all the NXT people there, the 20 we know and the 80 that we never see because they're stuck in a warehouse somewhere. You put all of them out there. You can pre-produce this. This could be a tape show. You could do everything you what I was so surprised by, because Brian, I'm with you. They have messed this up for years. Like, they don't know the format, which is baffling because people hear draft. Brian, what do we love to do in August every year?
Oh, fantasy draft.
People love to do this. There are podcasts where people just fantasy draft random shit.
Yes.
All you have to do is, I think that one of the most famous draft moments of all time, right, is Taker sitting in the room and he gets drafted and he's amongst everybody else. And he's like, son of a, that look, that it's a meme now. You got to be kidding me. Kevin Owens a couple years ago, I watched him cut a promo because he was legit pissed he was going to Raw. And he had to cut the promo three times. Like, there is emotion to that because people are changing travel. And you can pre-produce this. You can have a panel. Figure out who your Mel Kiper is. You know, right. Who's that? Who's hosting? You got Jackie can do interviews and Kayla and Byron. You got all that. All that stuff's right there. All of the pieces on a thing you can control. The NFL draft is great because it's unpredictable. But five offensive linemen get drafted in a row. It gets kind of boring. Like, that's – you never have to worry about that. You can – they don't play up trades. They don't do, you know, like, hey, what's an edit? Who is Lyra Valkyria to someone who's not watching on Tuesday nights, the 612,000 people? Who the hell is that? Nice emotion. Love to see it. Why should I care? I don't know who that is. If you could tell that much of a story, give me a little insert. Give me 30 seconds on – you can make it feel so much bigger. Jimmy, the standalone idea of that, it seems ready-made for, by the way, a company that I believe, and I was there for a couple months of this, wants to be more sports-oriented and hired the guy who ran ESPN football for 25 years. I'm more surprised that he let it happen versus Triple H, who I don't think knows the NFL draft or what drafts are like.
Well, here's another thing that kills me, though. Even the draft sucks, okay? they still don't stick to the guidelines. Everybody's still in their 20s. So it means nothing. That's why I think the draft name needs to be thrown out, because this is not a draft. It's not of any capacity. And I want to ask any of you, why can they not get the concept down? Why do you think that is?
Because LaGreca talked about it. Dave LaGreca talked about it this morning on Busted Open. Is you leave Raw, leave SmackDown alone. You know, Matt talked about Laya Valkyrie, or I'm butchering her name, so I apologize. All NXT. You know, Raw has three, SmackDown has three, and then you get two random ones, or whatever the case may be. You want to, they're constantly talking about building the company for the future. And NXT is that future, I think.
You'd hope it is. Jimmy, do you think there's something to not wanting to bury people based on their draft pick? Why they do four picks in round one, stuff like that?
I think there's some of that involved in this, because, you can make the storyline like they did with Punk and Drew McIntyre, where why was I picked after CM Punk? It doesn't,
perfect.
That stuff I get. But to RJ's point, I like the idea. You talk about making it more like the NFL draft. The NFL draft, they choose college football players. That's where they draft from. They don't draft from the other team. You don't see somebody from Kansas City. You don't see the Kansas City War Room drafting from, from the Buffalo Bills or anything like that.
But what do you see, Jimmy, during that? You see trades.
Trades.
You see trades. Hey, big players. Signings.
I'll trade you our number two pick, for a 4 and 5 or something like that.
But I'll give up this. I'll give up an AJ Styles to get that. They do. Right. They can control so many of those things. And to Brian's point, if you're not going to move that many people around because of creative, whatever, then why do it now? You don't need to do it early. Right. I think they had moved it up a couple years ago because they wanted to get away from Survivor Series, because you'd have people on the roster for a month ago. I care about blue now, even though I was on red a month ago, and it doesn't really mean anything. They've done War Games. They don't even do that anymore. So was it a Fox thing? Was it a USA thing? Was it, we're going to do it against the draft, and Nick Khan go, hey, look, NFL draft's going on. Why can't we do his art at the same time? Well, what had happened? They get their worst SmackDown rating in forever against day two of the draft. It was extremely quarter-baked. It wasn't even half-baked. Right. It's a ratings grab by the name alone.
Well, I agree with all three of your ideas, even though they may suck or not be good or whatever it may be, but it's way better than what the hell we're watching now. And I just think that all of y'all's ideas sound wonderful comparative to what we're watching. And I also think it's time now, because we spent a little time on that we talk about a little Khan. Anybody know who that is?
Well, there's a Nick Khan. Are we talking about him, or are we talking about
there's a Genghis?
Khan?
There's a Genghis Khan. It didn't really end up too well for him, but there's a history Khan reference. Folks.
There's that too. Yeah,
there's a history reference there, folks. You're not going to get too many out very often.
Google it, kids.
Yeah, as Jimmy has said numerous times. He shot himself in the left one, and then he spoke again. He shot him in the right one, and now he is ballless. So he really played up the whole neck brace thing. They're talking, comparing it to Andy Kaufman. I get that. Fantastic. I'm not knocking that, guys, but I am knocking. He always takes it just a little bit too far.
Just a little?
I'm being
sorry.
Generous.
I'm
lobbing them to you, Jimmy. I know you're getting don't get hot, brother.
No, I don't wish this company any malice whatsoever. I want the company to thrive, but somebody's got to take his cell phone away from him and lock it up somewhere where he doesn't have access to it, and keep him away from any kind of press, because he had a platform there, a huge one on NFL Network, to pump the tires of his product and get his stuff over. They came off a great pay-per-view. They came off a Dynamite, which was kind of lackluster. You could pick, but they ended with an angle. He continued that angle on television. Pump that up. Let people get invested in that. Instead, it wasn't even asked a question about the other guys, but had to make it about the other guys, where he said, we're battling against the evil juggernaut. Evil juggernaut? Who are you, in Star Wars now? What the hell? And then, we're the Pepsi, because he didn't want to mention the other kind of cola, but You know, we're the Pepsi, the Harvey. We're the
cola.
Harvey.
What's the other cola?
Cola, I don't know. RC cola.
No, it's called Coke, isn't it?
Kayfabe, brother.
Okay, my bad.
But he calls him the Harvey Weinstein of professional wrestling. Did he have to go there? Did he have to go that low? It made absolutely no sense. And, you know, I'm going to say it. There's a bunch of guys in the AEW locker room that kind of shook their heads and went, oh, my goodness, can we stop this guy from doing this? Somebody please speak to him. That's the point where it's gotten to. It did nothing to benefit the company. All the goodwill that he made by getting his company over in the first half of that interview, he flushed it all down the toilet with that one comment that made absolutely no sense, was ridiculous and unnecessary. And I don't mind people taking little jabs back and forth that were kind of, ha ha ha, that was kind of funny. But this wasn't one of those. It was just ridiculous. I can't find a more descriptive word for it, but I can.
Yeah, you can. Say it.
Yeah, no, I will save it for when it's for someone who deserves it. Well, he deserves a bunch of them, and I'm sure, Brian, you can give it to him.
Wow. Brian, if Jimmy won't say it, then I'll say it. He clearly gives no more fucks anymore. It seems. Anyways.
I don't get what it does for him or his company, and that even the NFL Network, Matt, they just cut him off.
They don't. That mm-hmm. They didn't connect the dots. They heard Harvey Weinstein on an NFL Network and went, wait, that's right. Regardless of who they were. That could have been about anybody. They don't want to hear that name. And they're having him on with the neck brace, playing up the injury. I will give him one little bit. The fact that he said, and he stuck it in, and neither Garofalo nor Steve Weiss got it. He's like, well, you know, they hit me with a pile driver, which is banned in the state of Tennessee. That was good. That's like the Tony I want to hear. Why did he do it, right? Okay, what's the comparison? Vince apparently hired Harvey Weinstein's PR guy. Okay, that's not a great look, right? It's not a great look. We know what happened with Weinstein and the stuff Vince has been alleged of, okay? So there's a dark cloud that I think WWE is going to have to deal with. I know that Vince isn't part of the company, but they're going to have to deal with that. And they have PR, and they have very good PR, and they're very good at that stuff. And I think that's actually come up a lot more in the news in the last couple weeks. But they know what they're doing, especially with Endeavor behind them. They're going to take care of that. You could choose to believe what they're saying or not. It's coming from them. It's coming from their PR. They're going to spin it how they need to. I understand that. I'm not holding anybody over the fire for that. I don't mind, Jimmy, to your point, the little shots. I thought Toni Storm's thing was kind of funny. Cody didn't like it, but I thought it was kind of funny. She's a heel. She was playing with the owner. Whatever. It's not a big deal. You move on. You're playing up a nice angle for yourself. I would have spent 2 minutes and 45 seconds of the 3-minute interview on that. You want to take that evil juggernaut shot at him? That's okay. I don't really care about that. WWE did that back in the day. They did Nacho Man, all that stuff. And you had Jim Cornette come on atop of Raw and rip that. Okay, whatever. That goes by. It gets magnified more now because we have more shows to talk about it.
But that was a war. But that was a war, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't, sure, yeah. But you can't tell Tony this isn't.
It's not.
I understand that because there is, I tell people this all the time. When I was there, I said, listen, I hope they're doing well. I have a lot of friends there. It's financially competitive. Nobody has been at that level. Nobody has been financially competitive where they can pay people to go over there. Like, that's a great thing for wrestling. It's a great thing for all of us.
No doubt.
A great thing for wrestling fans. It is competitive in that way. They're going to get a nice TV deal. But there is room in 2024, just like there's been for the last 3 or 4 years, for both companies to strive and succeed independently of one another. And while the other one is doing well, there's clearly, I think WWE doing well is good for AEW if they pick their game up. Just like I thought when AEW was doing well, WWE did have to kind of pick their game up. They lagged a little bit. I was there during some of those years, like, oof. Come on now, we got to do better than this. You know, you could see, and which is good, competition. You guys know this. Think about how things were in 98, 97. So there is something to, I like the fire that Tony has. I think at times, like we saw there, it's misplaced fire. He could do better than that.
I agree. I agree with that totally. And go ahead, Jimmy. I know you're spitting fire right now. Go ahead.
No, it's just, I wish you would take the time to listen to all the brains and minds that he has surrounding him. That's the thing. He's going into business for himself. Somebody take the, I'm telling you, somebody at 4 a.m. is tweeting crap, the stuff he's tweeting. No, you don't have to do that. If you're going to tweet something at 4 a.m., tweet about, how about you take care of Swerve like you didn't take care of him last Wednesday night? Here's your new AEW World Heavyweight Champion, first black champion, world champion that you've had in your company. And you start off the show with the stupid, okay, I get the Bucks arriving and all that kind of stuff. But then you blow the surprise at the end with Jack Perry. That's one other thing. And then instead of going to Swerve and have the big celebration, which you shouldn't have, not be in a match, and no disrespect to Kyle Fletcher, who's good in the ring. But what did that do for either one of them? Absolutely nothing. Have that celebration, have your big moment, and don't do this Orange Cassidy getting beat up. And it was a nice little angle, but should have been sales in the show and not to start it off. He's missing cues here. Somebody needs to get in there and tell him this is where these things should be placed in the show, and just book the show for him and stop throwing matches together. Because yes, we love the dream matches. This first time ever, or so-and-so versus so-and-so, which is a beautiful match. But give me reasons for the match. Right. You know what I mean? Build a story to it. Give us some backstory. Even guys who have wrestled each other in Japan in the past. Yes, they're going to be great matches. But let us know that. You know, they did a great job with giving us a backstory with Bryan Danielson and Will Ospreay. But they blew it off too quickly in one match at a pay-per-view. You know, it boggles my mind sometimes.
I think there's a lot of good that happens on that show. I think there's a lot of different that happens versus WWE. I watched WrestleMania not being there and stepping back. And I watched it and I said, man, this is as beautiful as it gets. It's also too glossy. Like, it's too nice. Some of these are big blow-off feuds. Rhea came out there with Becky. There felt like they were just on display. Like, it didn't feel like that, because everything was just too nice and pretty and big. And it's like, you know, the Super Bowl, those teams, they change hotels the night before for a reason, right? They get one day of media. That's what it, and I know it's different, obviously, but this is the Super Bowl of wrestling. They do one day of media and they get back to practicing. That week is appearances and, you know, you're great and here's the state of the industry and where are you going? We're selling that. And I know that's part of it because they're also actors. But the heat of those matches tends to evaporate, especially in a big arena, and it was cold, but everything was just too nice. It's not grungy enough. It's not dirty enough. I think AEW is pretty good about that. I think there is something that less is more. I loved Backlash last year. Why? The fans were everywhere. We had one little Tron. How great did that make Bad Bunny's entrance? Like, you can turn it, and I know they're now trying to sell more tickets, so the Trons come down a little bit. It just feels, I've always said this, the WWE is a rock movie. It's a Michael Bay movie. Everything's big and loud and spectacular, and you're going to know who's exactly in the movie. The stories will be up and down, but, you know, it'll be gratifying in some way. They won't miss a beat. They won't miss a dollar spent. That can take the heat away from me in some of these matches, and especially with social media letting so many more people in. I think AEW has that as an advantage. I think because their fan base is a strong, caring fan base, I'd like it to be bigger. I think they should try to make it bigger. But they care about it, and their stuff gets over, but it doesn't get over. It get over to the core audience. They need to look bigger. They don't promote well enough. I think that's something that Tony needs to look at right in the mirror. Mm-hmm. You got to promote more. Why doesn't their YouTube channel give you highlights? You can't... I'll throw this out there, right? If you're going to sign a Moxley, you're going to sign a Chris Jericho, you're going to sign a Bryan Danielson, you know they have name value that comes from WWE. That's going to bring in audience. But you also want that audience to go, hey, who's Hangman Page? I like that guy. Hey, who's Thunder Rosa? I like her. Who's Orange Cassidy? You know, I want to see more of them. And you can't do that because you can't go back and watch their last 5 years of stuff. You need to condition the audience that they can go find your stuff. We're in that kind of world. We're in a world where they got to get you in 15 seconds right here on TikTok.
Right.
And if somebody sees Orange Cassidy do something fun on the show, they're going to go, oh, who's that guy? And they don't do that kind of stuff enough. And that stuff drives me nuts because WWE does that so well. Their social media team's unbelievable. And the effort that they put in with that is what drives viewership and is going to get the younger viewers. I wish Tony put more money into promotion and social media and selling his product, not only on a week-to-week basis, but on a 5 years ago basis and the next 5 years basis, instead of here's an all-elite graphic for this person that we might not even know about in 4 weeks. That is maddening and such a correctable thing.
Really quickly, if I could just add to that, it's another thing that it is in his mind that he believes that every hardcore wrestling fan knows everybody in Japan. Look, I love wrestling. I love all companies. I don't care what the three letters are that precede the name of the company. I like wrestling. I like AEW. I like WWE. I like TNA. I like a lot of stuff. But there's just too much of it out there. I can't take the time out of my week to go search out New Japan Pro Wrestling. I just don't have the time.
Think
for
how much TV's up. Think about just those. Think about WWE. 3, 2, and 2 on just three of their shows.
Right.
It's hard. It's great. I love that there's wrestling everywhere, but you can't assume that. And you have social media to push that kind of stuff out. It doesn't always have to be on the show. To your point, Jimmy, you don't have to cram in a Young Bucks entrance, an Orange Cassidy beatdown before your champ gets on the show. How many times do they run out of time?
Exactly, because they don't let anything take time and breathe. Marinate, let the audience absorb what they just saw. Everything is like, okay, like, hey, what a great match, next.
Yep.
Hey, what a great promo, next.
I said it on Busted Open, how do you miss Adam Cole taking more than one step of such a big moment at the pay-per-view that he's apparently healthy, and they cut away? And they didn't stay with it long enough. Bryan Danielson apparently gets taken out. You actually get to put a little story behind that with Ospreay going, oh my God, I took out my hero. And we cut to a quick 30-second thing with the Bucks, and Alex Gallagher's got to come back and go, Brandon Danielson walked out of the ring on his own power. Well, there goes the visual of that. There goes the visual that you could sell to Wednesday when Ospreay's wondering, oh, my God, what did I do? Instead, we get verbiage because we got to get to the next match.
Or even play it on Wednesday.
Right, play it on play back, sure. Give me the whole thing. Oh, my God. And show Will. Get Will. Cause I can't talk right now. I'm just too distracted. That's all you needed to do. It's so quick. It's so little things. Jimmy, I used to listen to you and Arda. How many often times did you talk about just the little things? I think Triple H, since taking over, has filled in those little gaps. Little things in the background of vignettes. Anybody who's on WWE television right now is on for a reason. There are no wasted matches. Something is leading to at least something. Whether it's a TV program, whether it's, you know, connected to another program, nothing is wasted. And they have more hours to play with than anybody, but nothing is wasted. If you don't think you have enough time, then maybe it shouldn't be on the show.
Hey, guys, so why don't we do this? Why don't we send it up to our ref and review this week and be right back.
This is Ref and Review.
We are back with our ref and review this week. Jimmy, man, really like what you're doing over there at Wrestling Inc. It seems to be a Tuesday ritual for me. Listen to Triple J every Tuesday. But something that I did pick up on from listening to that and watching last night during the triple threat match, there was an instance where Priest goes into the corner and on the apron and bumps with Finn Balor.
Right.
Somehow, some facet, now Finn Balor's legal.
Right.
Why? Why? Because I, correct me if I'm wrong, I may be wrong, I usually am, but the referee never signaled saying, okay, Finn's legal now. Let's go.
Right. That was the problem I had with it. I don't have a problem with it being considered a legal tag because we've seen guys tag in, blind tag, as they call it, where they come back up into the ropes and somebody will hit them on the back and they say, oh, that's a legal tag and that sort of thing. Finn Balor was in his corner, his legal corner. Damian Priest got hit, got thrown into that corner, bumped into Finn, knocked him off the apron. It wasn't technically a blind tag, but it was incidental contact, I guess, for lack of a better term. But that constitutes a legal tag because you made contact, whether you meant to or not, with your partner on the apron. And when Finn slid back in the ring, it was commentary who had to kind of cover for it and say, yes, I believe Finn Balor is the referee has called it a legal tag. The referee has to be aware because he knows what the finish is going to be and on who. I think the fans were left a little bit confused as to why Finn Balor ate the pin on that one when they thought that Damian Priest was a legal guy. That was the reason why that Finn Balor was the legal guy. They just didn't cover it up well. The referee needed to signal it, whether it was like, yes, there's a tag, he, you in, you out, something, you know, Brian, how it's done. You do the hand motions, you're directing traffic that way. That didn't happen. That's what confused a lot of people. And some people asked me on my social media, was that a real tag? I didn't see a tag. Well, here's why you didn't notice it.
Jimmy, here's my only problem, man. Obviously, I don't want to argue with you, but I will combat
you.
I will combat you on this. You can't run into someone and that be a legal tag. There has to be an effort to make a tag. In other words, in other words, you're saying, and once again, I'm not being ugly, you're my good brother in stripes, but so you can have your back to the crowd fucking with them and saying whatever, and the guy runs into you, and now he's legally tagged in?
Well, if you do it from a heel perspective, then it works.
Yeah, but
you know what I'm saying? I know what you're saying, Brian. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to cut you off or anything like that. And I absolutely understand where you're coming from. But at the same time, it's like I said, incidental contact. If it happened in the middle of the ropes, okay, fine. You get knocked off. That's not a legal tag. But if you do it right in the corner where you are, you know, there to make a legal tag, then it makes it okay.
Don't we have enough convoluted shit now, though? So now we're going to confuse them with, you know, I get it. A blind tag with a guy does this because it's a voluntary movement that says, I want to tag in. Whether the guy wants to tag you or not is another question. And that's where you get stories as well. But right. you just running into them because you got kicked or whatever it may be that drove you there, to me is a very fine line of a guy being tagged in. And that's why it's called tag team wrestling.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Sure.
If you're going to do that, that finish, they're doing it for a reason, right? They don't want Priest to get pinned before the pay-per-view.
Right.
It also feels like they're kind of trying to protect Finn a little bit. Just sign him a new contract, all that kind of. And it was both. Like, it was trying to do, like, you're trying to get Jay over. Mm-hmm. This is Jay's first main event since Roman. Just have him beat JD McDonagh. Why try to do too much? Like, now it's too confusing, and it's like, well, Jay needed to have confusion with Judgment Day to get the pin, unless they're trying to tell a story. And once again, Brian, too convoluted, that there's issues within the Judgment Day, that there's no Rhea there means that they're not as cohesive. Okay, fine. But to that point, you know, if Priest runs in, I think, Jimmy, you're saying, like, if it works for a heel where they don't know what happened, if he runs in and Finn's hand, and, like, he looks around, and he gets, like, he turns back or something distracted him, and he doesn't see the ref go, tag.
Right.
Now at least you've done it.
Right.
It's still convoluted.
Right.
But if he gets distracted and doesn't see that the ref has now put him in the ring, now Jay pulls him in and takes advantage of their miscommunication, and the finish probably comes off a little bit better. Still convoluted, still no way to treat Jay a week before the pay-per-view.
And I just feel like body contact's not enough as a tag. It's called a tag. Body contact is not a tag. To me,
but he did tag him.
but what I'm saying is, even to bounce off what Matt just said, even if the guy turns around to the crowd and does one of these, he spreads his hands out like, what do you want to do? And the guy hits him then. Okay, I'll go with that. If you want to do it, that's, to me, convoluted again. But still, like Matt said, just have him beat the other guy and make it. Because when you and I get tweets about a finish, if they're confused, you know, every fucking body's confused.
Right. Especially when they're asking, I wasn't sure who the legal man was.
Right.
And that's usually those tweets come from people who are watching on television, and that falls on a lot of people, whether it's the way the match was set up, that actual spot was set up make it a kind of a questionable tag.
Yeah.
For lack of a better term. And the announce team has to clearly define it for the audience to understand what's going on.
That's why Michael Cole says tag. He says it every time, almost to the point he doesn't need to, but at least it's clear for maybe reasons like that.
Now, if the referee didn't do it, though, Jimmy, if the referee did not do that, we're confused as fuck. You know
exactly.
What I mean?
At least if he could have done that, it would have made a little more sense to the audience live. And that way, you know, when Michael Cole says it, instead of, you know, Pat McAfee saying, was that a legal tag? Was there a tag made? Then it makes it totally confusing. And to the other point about JD McDonagh maybe eating the pin on that one, I think he's being looked at as the scapegoat too much lately. So maybe that was another reason why for doing it this way. I don't know.
God, we're playing into too many fucking people's feelings. Fuck. It's wrestling. It's fucking wrestling.
I know. Hey, I know the Jeez. Old adage, you can get over without going over, but every once in a while you need a dub in your win column.
I mean, I get it, but shit.
Well, maybe it's just like you said, maybe it's a storyline. Maybe it's one of those things where they're trying, like Matt said, it's you're protecting Finn, you're protecting Damian because, you know, you got to protect the champ. You don't want him to eat in the pin before. And same with Finn too, because signing him, you just signed Drew. And I'm sure there's going to be more signings coming up. So you have to think, you know, a couple steps ahead of the game.
There you go. You just made me, you know, the fantasy pencil guy again. Here we go. I actually have it handy right here, my pencil. But just if you're going to cause friction between Finn and Priest, perfect way to do it is, why did you tag yourself in? I had this under control. Yeah. I told you guys, I have everything under control. Leave it to me. I will take care of everything. And Finn's like, I didn't tag myself in, but you were the legal man. What do you mean you didn't tag, you know, get that?
Or do it in the match, Jimmy. Have him tag. He thinks Priest's in trouble. He's trying to protect him. He tags himself in. Priest spins him around and goes, what are you doing? I'm the champ. Like, come on. And then there. Yeah. You run Finn into Damian. You hit your finish. You still get it.
Yeah.
That's just convoluted. It was just, and a main event, too. Don't confuse. Don't hang your announcers out to dry, by the way, on top of everything else. They got to tell the story.
And that's my only point, Matt. You're right. I mean, Jimmy, once again, I'm not trying to disagree with you. I'm just saying, it's just too confusing, and I'm not convinced that's what a tag should be. And my God, we have seen some tags nowadays where there's no sense in having a referee. So now we're going to have these new tags that we can make now where there's body contact made and you're tagged in. I mean, let's not make it all crazy. Well, it's already crazy. I don't know.
Well, there's some places where every tag is like a Texas Tornado match anyway. So what's the point?
Well, that's what I'm saying. So now we're going to look. If you kick them in the butt and they go into the guy and they're tagged in now. I don't want to go there. Now, I was in a good mood. I still want to be in a good mood.
But as long as it happens over the top rope, stop of these guys leaning in between the ropes to make a tag and then the referee acknowledging it. And it stop with the term referee's discretion. There's no such thing as referee's discretion. You count when they're outside the ring. You count when their shoulders are being pinned to the mat. When they're in the ropes, you tell them to break. You can fudge the numbers a little bit, but you have to make a count instead of let them sit there and punch the living shit out of the guy for like 5 minutes.
Well, while we're in referee review, we have to bring this up. Matt Camp.
Yes.
You know a little something about refereeing and not professional wrestling, but you know a little something about refereeing in the NFL, don't you?
I do. My dad spent 22 years as an official in the NFL. He was a judge. Down 22 years.
Oh,
he was alternate on Super Bowl 3 times. He had the Super Bowl. He ref multiple championship games. His last on-field assignment, this is one of my the coolest things I've been ever able to do. I was at my first Rumble with WWE, and I was covering it for the bump.
Well, before you cover that, Matt, we do a much better job than the NFL referees, but go ahead.
Well, my dad still works in the NFL, so no comment on that one.
I'm ribbing.
I got to go. I worked the Rumble in St. Louis, and my dad ended up getting Bengals Chiefs in Kansas City the year the Bengals went to the Super Bowl. So I got up the morning after the Rumble, which is the first year they went to Saturday. This is all, you know, kismet, whatever you want to call it. And I got in a car and I drove 3 hours across Missouri. My sister flew in from New Jersey and we got to watch my dad's last on-field game. I was at the Rumble the night before and then I got to watch my dad work Bengals Chiefs, unreal game, his last on-field assignment, which is awesome. I got to be there for that. I got to be there for his last regular season game. He had Steelers, Ravens that year. Nice. I traveled all over with him. And honestly, it's a reason why, Brian, when I came into that TNA locker room the first time, I knew to shut the fuck up and get out of the way because that's what I did. In NFL locker rooms around the – there's a sign that says positively no visitors, and I was 16 or something. And I used to go with my dad pre-9/11 or around that because they got real tight about that stuff. And I used to help him watch the footballs before the game. He was the rookie. He was the young guy in the crew. That's a thing everywhere in every sport that exists. So we used to rub the balls down with a towel, Brian. And then we had
to rub the balls. I didn't know.
And then we had to brush them, and then we would check the weight. So I'm doing that at, like, I think it was in Washington. And I can't, and Tagliabue comes in, and it's, I'm like, oh God. And I'm like, you know, NFL golf shirt and my khakis. I was 16 years old. I was trying to look proper. And he's like, hey, thanks for helping out today. And I was like, all right, Commissioner, no problem. And I got to travel everywhere with my dad. It was the coolest thing. And he would see people on flights. You know, he's like, I think Kurt Angle and Big Show were on my flight. I was like, I hope you're not in a better seat than Big Show, because that doesn't really – and my dad's 6'4", but he's not 7 foot. But he would see guys around and all that all the time. So I actually told Brian, I took him, if you remember this, I still have the picture. I took him to Brooklyn. And – TNA was running the show. Like, Bubba and Sting did it. Like, Sting was doing a couple house shows then. We were at Ripken Stadium in Baltimore, and then Brooklyn at MCU Park, where the Cyclones play. And I was like, my dad took me to my first show ever. So I was like, hey, let me take you to a show that, like, I'm, you know, familiar with. And you, and
that's when we were doing the base brawls.
The base brawls. Yeah.
Base brawls.
You know, great stacked roster. Your dad was doing his thing at the beginning where you wear the shirt and, you know, he'd sell some merch right off the first match because he's a genius. And
no way.
Hell of a worker. I learned from him as well. And my dad went, like, we took a picture, me, you, my dad, and your dad. And I have it somewhere. And he enjoyed it. Like, he took it in and he's like, I love the spectacle of it. Like, he got it. And the funny thing goes, hey, what's this thing with letting the pigeons loose? And me trying to explain that to my dad, he's like, these guys kept saying it. I was like, yeah, it's a thing. Sure. And I couldn't explain it to him, but I was like, it's one of the girls. She goes over the ropes, and that's what Taz says. He's like, who's Taz? Never mind. Don't worry about it. So he took me to my first show, though, February 1992 at MSG.
Matt, real quick, though, you know what's the coolest thing about that story, though, honestly?
Yeah.
Is that you would think that your dad, who was going into a world that he didn't know about, would be a mark, you know what I mean? Like, which I'm sure he was in awe about a lot of things.
Yeah.
But when I saw him, I recognized him from being on NFL.
Yes.
And
but
I
you don't typically
out.
See him because he's not a referee, but he'd be on the sideline. His spot was on the sideline. So you'd always see him next to coaches and stuff like that. His last game ever, Ian Eagle, one of the best play-by-play guys of all time, often flew out of New York with him and gave him a shout out. And here he is getting yelled at by Harbaugh. He's like, Ed Camp, it's his last game. I'm sure he won't miss that, you know, that kind of stuff. But I've been around it my whole life. And, you know, I was like, yeah, I know some refs. I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, well, they're wrestling refs. All right. It's a little different job there. I was like, yeah, but
he's,
you know,
probably like, fuck them.
No. He loves the spectacle. I actually sent him to a Raw a couple years ago and he really enjoyed it. And my stepmom, like, is a big Broadway fan and loved the spectacle of it all. She's like, they do that all the time? I was like, never ends. They take that show on the road. And she's like, the production of that. And I go, yep, nobody wins awards for it either. And it baffles me to this day.
It does.
Oh, it's amazing. I love the fact that your dad came from the world of striped shirts. Did he ever have to take a bump in the NFL?
So my dad, this is a kind of a bummer of a story. He had Steelers-Ravens AFC Championship in, like, 2008. And I was working for a sports communications company at the time. So I'm watching the game as part of my job. And right at the half, I don't know what happened. But he calls me at halftime of the AFC Championship that he's refereeing. So if his numbers, I go, what happened? Hi, he goes, I'm done. I was like, what happened? Last play before the kickoff of the half, I stepped wrong and tore my Achilles. Like, wow. And on that crappy-ass Heinz Field turf that has claimed a lot, and he, like, partially tore his Achilles, and he ended up making a recovery to work for the start of the next season, and his first game was Arizona Cardinals at Pittsburgh Steelers. So he walked right back into the same stadium he got hurt. He was okay. But, I remember when he was trying to get in the NFL, you guys would get this, you work as much as you can, wherever you can, like the Indies. Mm-hmm. So he's working college football. He's working NFL Europe, World Football League. He's working Arena League. One of his first Arena League games, and I think this is wild, even a preseason Arena Football League game, they had those hockey boards. He got rolled up on, like, second or third play and had to ref, and just that's how it was. So, you know, he got to be careful to avoid it. And, you know, that was always something hey, watch out. Get the hell out of the way. Don't get into those fights, you know. Let those giant guys who weigh 100 pounds more than you, let them throw fists at each other. That's fine. But for the most part, other than that thing in Pittsburgh, he avoided injury. And luckily, he had to do a lot of running, you know, because, you know, that's part of it. You know, he wasn't in the middle of the field, so he's not the umpire getting out of the way of stuff. But, when those guys come flying at you, you got to make sure they're in bounds and then try to get yourself out of the way.
And you got to stay in position to call.
Yes, you exactly.
Especially when you're on the sidelines and they're heading close to that sideline, you got to be somewhere where they can see where they go out.
Well,
you got
to see them go out, and you got to officiate them going there because they might go fight each other. Right. You got to make sure stuff doesn't happen there. If it's a Steelers Ravens game and a Steeler goes into the Ravens sideline, you got to keep an eye on that because there could be 15 yards coming very quickly. So yeah, there's a lot that goes into that.
So are you saying that referees need to be in position, right? Is that what y'all are saying?
In any sport, yes, Brian.
Oh,
absolutely.
I just thought that was not in wrestling anymore. I didn't
know. Oh, even in sports entertainment, they need to be in position.
I believe so.
Oh, yep, goodness. They should.
Work the halo, right? Isn't that what you're supposed to do?
The horseshoe. You work the horseshoe on TV, and some people don't get that. We talked about it before here. I got blasted by Vince one time for – he used to always say, you get yourself in position. If you can't see both shoulders – then you don't count. You get in a position where you can see both. And it didn't matter. He says, we got two hard cameras. We got three ringside cameras. Somebody will get the shot. I'm seeing guys now, they're counting out butt cheeks. I mean, how can you see shoulders?
It's that and people who hit their finish without naturally getting to the hard cam that drives me nuts. Absolutely drives me. If you're not there naturally, then don't try to do it. The convoluted, let me turn this way and oh, there it is. Like, it's not a natural move. It's just, I get what you're doing. But to your point, Austin talked about this. He did a great podcast once where he watched him in Rocket 17. And he's like, I never overly worked to the hard cam because I knew they'd find me. And I talked to the Geimer guys beforehand. Hey, we're going to do this here and this here. Use what you have at your disposal. You have a great production crew, no matter where you are, an experienced cameraman. If you got a spot and you want to do it somewhere and you want to do it so it looks legit, Use your crew. I think that's referee, use your producers, use everybody. That irks me when I see, like, let's get into position now.
And that's where communication comes into play, too, because you have to communicate to the truck and let them know what's coming, because if they don't know what's coming, how do they know what to shoot?
Yep.
They're going to make you look good.
Matt, yeah. I made one mistake, Matt, with you and me as friends. I made one mistake. Yes. I talked and told you too much.
I was a sponge. That was the thing. I love that.
But you know what? You're one of the best people I could have ever done it with. So we are all
good, buddy. You got me this far. I always give you credit for that. I was happy to see you in Philly for Busted Open. I learned that from my dad. As you remember who helped you along the way, whether they meant to or being your friend, you remember that, and that's why we can do this kind of stuff, you know, down the road.
Absolutely.
So, guys, why don't we do this? Why don't we hear from our sponsor this week? You're talking about hard decisions. Don't make it a hard decision with Blue Chew. So why don't we send it up to them right now, and we'll be back with our second count. This episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. Let's talk about sex, guys. Shouldn't you always be at your best? Make 2024 the year to maximize your performance in the bedroom. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra, Cialis, and Levitra, but in chewable tablets and at a fraction of the cost. You can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead or be ready whenever an opportunity arises. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll be able to receive your prescription within days. And the best part, guys, it's all done online. So no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy. Blue Chew tablets are made in the USA and prepared and shipped directly to your door in a discreet package. With Blue Chew, men everywhere are excited to see the postman, because when your package has arrived, your package has arrived. And we've got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use the promo code REFIN at checkout. Just pay $5 for shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code REFIN, R-E-F-I-N, to receive your first month free. Just pay $5 shipping. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring our show today. Chew it and do it.
This is your two count.
We are back with our second count. Guys, we saw this whole announcement from The Rock, of all people, this past week. with the signing, re-signing, excuse me, of Drew McIntyre. Jimmy, we really have been boasting him, putting him up on that pedestal over the last, you know, number of months leading up to WrestleMania and then after as well. This is probably one of the best things that they possibly could do for the company right now, right?
Well, obviously, it's a no-brainer in my opinion, because Drew McIntyre, as we've alluded to, has been doing some of the best work of his career right now. He went away for a while, he came back, he found himself, and he's, I don't know whether it was him himself, a little bit help along the way, all of the above. Drew McIntyre is a big-time player, because every time he goes out there, he is not only hitting home runs, he's hitting grand slams. And that's hard to do week in and week out, and he's doing it. And you look, the whole free agent thing, he maybe felt it tested the waters elsewhere, but at the back of his mind, yes, you would have got a nice payday from the other place, but would that be enough to satisfy someone like a Drew McIntyre creatively? You know, we see the, and again, hate to point fingers at the other guys, and here he goes, harping on the AEW guys. But they have, in my opinion, missed the boat on a few people, dropped the ball a couple of times with some of the talents that they brought over from WWE, which could have been big-time players. Yes, you want to build up your homemade superstars, but at the same time, you can make a nice blend, a nice mix of both, and elevate that company. But Drew staying with WWE means that they see a lot of upside in him. We all do. There's, like I said, it's a no-brainer. And this guy's going to be a player. They've got a built-in rivalry with him and Punk that's going to be money. And that, there's no title that needs to be involved in this thing at all. Mm-mm. And when you can do that without any titles being involved and you can draw money like that, that's a big time player.
And think about what they have coming up there at Clash of the Castle. He was a reason they had that PLE over there a couple of years ago in Europe, and now he's coming home. Jimmy, I talked about this on Busted Open over the weekend. Doesn't this seem on a silver platter to pull Brett in 97 with Drew in Scotland? Let him be the babyface for that night. And by the way, I would hope Punk is ready by June. Punk would revel in those boos. And when Drew comes back that Monday on Raw, he goes, ugh, I'm back. It's just for one night. He can roll right into it. I was happy to be around my people because, to his credit, to what they've done with him, this has been a slow burn. I remember asking about this. Like, there are very much shades right now of Brett in 97 and Diesel at the end of the run before WCW when there was this frustration of, like, what else can I do for you? And to Drew was, I carried this company through a pandemic. And the heel part of it, I had my moment taken away, and then he started beating up guys. You had to go there. But I interviewed the guy 20 times because he was the company man. And then to come back out on this side in a new regime and, oh, I'm not good enough anymore, and I can't get the opportunities, and, of course, he loses. But to have that story and him be angry and bitter but able to back himself up, and I could tell you for a fact, and I'll pull the curtain back a little here, those social media videos they're doing, they're unproduced for a reason. They know what he can do. They don't want to make it glossy. They don't want to make it pretty. They're letting Drew be Drew. If you've ever talked to Drew, he's going to talk wrestling all the time. The first time I interviewed him was like the third or fourth Bump episode. I didn't know him that well. He was morphing in. He was a couple months away from that Rumble win. But you could tell he loved it. And you could tell he relished the opportunity to do media and to be part of the company. And honestly, and I remember asking him this, Survivor Series a couple years ago, I go, what's going on, dude? Like, are you turning? He goes, I want to. But so much of the work, and I know John Cena had run into this and he wanted to, but Drew was so good at being the ambassador, they didn't want to make that guy a heel. And I get that. That's a business end of it. And then, you know, he rolled into the triple threat with Gunther and then comes back at SummerSlam and loses. And now you have a deeper roster. And now he can be that guy. And man, has he hit a home run. Think of happenstance goes a long way sometimes. If Punk doesn't get hurt, who knows? You know, maybe Drew doesn't get the amount of time he was getting. Maybe Drew doesn't get the Mania title match. And he's not a belt mark or anything like that. Believe me, it was just part of his story. But sometimes that stuff just works out, and I think he's happy in the spot he's in with Triple H running things, and I think it's such a major endorsement for a guy who worked that hard to get that payday from the new company and for The Rock. And by the way, we all know all that PR is thought out. They knew exactly what they were doing having The Rock make that announcement. Rock's going to announce good news. Rock announced the best news possible in their minds this week by giving Drew that sword and announcing his re-signing. That is the endorsement you want if you're Drew McIntyre. And if you're a fan of Drew McIntyre, you should feel great about that.
Speaking of peeling back the curtain, Matt, I was there at TNA when Drew made that transition. And what I'll say to you, I don't want to peel it all the way back, but he was a very bitter person at that point.
Yeah.
Very bitter and not a bad guy. I don't mean that. I'm talking about just bitter and angry to accomplish something, which to me, I wasn't quite sure, but now I understand. And he was a lot of hands-on with Bruce Pritchard and Kurt Angle. And I believe that what we see now is what I saw. And I believe the WWE saw and AEW saw. And I'm just telling you right now, what I'm witnessing right now is not shocking to me because I watched it unfold in front of my face.
Yep.
And I'm being dead serious when I say that. And the hands-on that he had with Bruce Pritchard and Kurt Angle, and there was others, you know, Jeff was also one of those guys as well. But it was unbelievable how much I saw a guy come into a company, didn't try and do anything except sponge it up, learn his character, learn the mic, learn how to work, work safely, work strong, and his complete style changed from that day. It really did. And it was fascinating to sit here and watch week in and week out at TVs. House shows, that's where he actually really, really, and that's why I feel like house shows are so important, expanded his character and his direction of where he wanted to go. And I saw that. And so I am not shocked. And I think this is so deserving for him because I haven't seen anybody work this hard.
Yeah, and one of the other sides of the coins, you see a lot of the great stuff that Drew's doing in WWE. You know, we talked about him briefly in previous counts, is Swerve Strickland, somebody that has, you know, been to the WWE, went away from the WWE, learning a new hold, getting a fresh coat of paint, if you will. Now he is the man in AEW. I really think with Swerve being there is the tip of the iceberg, man. He has the highest ceiling possible in the company right now, Matt. And I don't know how much of Swerve stuff that you've seen in the past, but it's unbelievable to see this transition that he's made getting to AEW.
I was there for it. I was not a huge Swerve fan. I covered him. I had to, you know, it's my job. I'm an announcer. I'm broadcast. I got to put the talent over. He needed an editor at times, I would say. I think sometimes they leaned into, well, you know, let's put them in the rap studio. Let's put him in the studio because he's going to record some. And they leaned into that. That was very NXT 2.0 stuff. I don't think that did him any favors. He needed to find confidence. I think the best thing to happen to him was getting let go. I was shocked that it happened. Admittedly, I'm not a top dollar guy. I don't think many people are, but like
same as Drew though, Matt, in a way.
Sure, yeah. Drew lost his way though. I think he'd tell you that it needed to happen. Yeah. I think Swerve was pissed off that he got let go. Like, how dare you? And they got that wrong. Like, they absolutely got that wrong. But he wouldn't be where he is today if that didn't happen. I think that's part of his evolution. That man lives with a bag of ruffles on his shoulder. Like, that's him. All the time. He reads everything, probably to his detriment, but if that's what's going to fuel you and get him to this point, he got there. The stuff with Hangman was really good. The character, they let it go. And there were some stops and starts in there. They mixed up the factions and all that, and that did him no favors, but he figured it out. He tapped into something else. He improved his body. That's also a big part of it. He looks the part now. Always a good worker. Always a good worker. Can do anything you need. The promos are more confident. And to that point, why didn't he cut a promo on Wednesday night? Why is he in the ring as the world? I don't need to see him prove himself. He just beat Samoa Joe, who, by the way, beat the 400-plus day reign of MJF. He proved it. Let him talk. Make the champions' matches matter. And instead, guys, he wrestles twice as the world champion in 1 week. And I love Claudio. But why is Swerve having another match on a show that's tape delayed? And I know they did a good number because of the lead-in, but it's a tape delayed show on a Saturday night. And why is his first promo not on a Wednesday?
I'm just tired of hearing about the
flip it.
tired of hearing about the lead-in, though. Who cares? Is that what
no, it does
about?
Matter. Brian, I think that does matter in television. In television, that matters. It's helped AEW. People watch Big Bang Theory. That stuff matters. It's why when Fox was leading SmackDown in with certain things, it would do well. Or they, you know, wrestling's been used as a lead-in. I do think that stuff matters. But we also knew that that was going to be a delayed show. So why have your world champ cut his first promo at 10:30, 11 o'clock on a Saturday night?
I'm saying it's being an excuse to not put him on Dynamite and let him talk.
They should have let him. That had nothing. Regardless of what was going on Saturday, he should have cut that promo on Wednesday night.
Right. That's my Absolutely. Point.
It just made it feel like, I hate to put it this way, because the guy, like you said, he's so talented and he ticks all the boxes. And this is a guy I keep saying strap the rocket to. You can absolutely strap the rocket. He got over organically with that audience because here's a guy that broke into somebody's house and was, you know, doing all the stuff a heel would do, but they still love the guy.
But
so
they love
him. They loved him. So they went with it. Good move. But then you made him feel like an afterthought because, like you said, you put him in a match that felt like an afterthought. And he also felt like an afterthought when you pumped up the tires of the IWGP champion and made it feel more important on your own show.
Yeah.
When you just had to crown a new world heavyweight champion.
Which I don't have a problem. There's too many belts. I don't have a problem with Jon Moxley, who can cut that opening show promo coming out to cut that opening show promo. That was pretty cool. And they're going to have Forbidden Door coming up. Go ahead. Think ahead. But why not let Swerve do the exact same thing? It's so easy. He doesn't have to prove himself against a guy, by the way, who never wins these matches. I like Kyle Fletcher. He's a nice Ring of Honor champion that we don't really see him defend that title, but we didn't need. There's a guy who doesn't need to take a loss. There's a match you don't have to have because you can give a big celebration yet Nana do his thing. They're in Jacksonville. He's going to get that welcome anyway. Man, that's such an easy thing to miss. That stuff is maddening, and that's not a knock on AEW. I don't want it to be that way. That's a correctable mistake. That's an unforced error.
The problem is they don't learn from the mistakes because that's what mistakes you're supposed to do with mistakes. They're not supposed. They're teaching tools.
And I want to say too, and then we need to move on. What's the ring name for his guy, his manager?
Prince Nana.
Prince Nana. I used to hate that so much. I did. I used to hate it so much. I thought it was worthless. Didn't do a thing for him. And actually didn't make him feel special. Didn't make him feel important or tough. But I think now that I saw the emotional portion of after the title win, it means a little something different to me now.
He's also babyface now, Brian. That's a difference. That's a big part of it.
Yeah. And so I want to apologize, not to y'all. I never expressed this to y'all. I expressed it to my friends, okay? Because it's one of those things you kind of just lay back on and just be like to your other friends, this is so stupid as fuck, you know, da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
But I have to say, like, when you know the story and you follow it, which AEW did a great job of this, in my opinion, he's not that stupid guy that's dancing for him anymore. You know what I mean? And that's what it felt like.
He's part of the journey, right? He's part of the journey.
Absolutely. And that's what I'm saying. So the story, the backstory of this, which they've done a good job with, I want to swerve too now. I want to do the, you know what I mean? Like,
it's over. It's over. That was a big reason why I think he did turn. And I was not a fan of that as a presentation. I don't think it added to his dark character. You had a guy who was kind of getting over for himself.
Yeah.
But it connected as a babyface, and that worked. And that's what was important. And now let them be friendly. Because I think there was almost times where Swerve looked like, all right, you're with me, I guess. Like, he kind of just let him be with him. Mm-hmm. He was a sidekick, not a manager the way like a Stokely Hathaway is, who's presenting his talent. You know, it felt like it was the Nana show, and also here's Swerve, the main eventer.
Right.
They have figured out a way to work that all in together, and you like them as a cohesive unit, mostly because Swerve's now a world champion babyface.
Right. Yep. Yeah.
So why don't we do this, guys? Why don't we send it up to our third count? We got a few listener questions. Hopefully we'll be able to get them all. But with that being said, let's send it up to our third count.
This is your three count.
We are back with our third count, man. And this is for everybody in general too, as well. But WWE Master 2018 would like to know any thoughts or memories of Shaughnessy And do you think Shanti can fit well with the Uncle Howdy or the faction of Uncle Howdy?
Shotzi Blackheart, that's what we're talking about?
I believe so, yes.
Yes.
Well, she's dealing with the torn ACL right now. So that's a problem number one right there. She could. She loves horror. That's her thing. I will tell you this. The times I got to work with Shotzi were a breeze. She loved what she did. She threw everything into what she did. She was super enthusiastic. I think if they gave her something, she'd sink her teeth into it. She's often a little bit more playful, fun, crazy versus like dark. But I think we saw elements of that when she got her hair cut. So, yeah, I think if it's not too cartoonish, and I don't know what way they're going with that, I think she can make it work because she tends to make things work. I think she's a better character than an in-ring worker anyway, and that probably would fit that group.
Yeah, there has been a lot of speculation as to, you know, Bo Dallas coming back and all that sort of stuff, and which character. I just hope they don't use that Uncle Howdy name, because I don't think it pays homage to the late, great Bray Wyatt in any way, shape,
I want them to get that right for everybody.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you go, RJ.
No, we saw his dad, Mike Rotunda, his uncle Barry Windham get inducted into the Hall of Fame. So I hope that they will play off of that family aspect of it, and have him be himself, man. Don't even be Bo Dallas anymore. You know, cut the cord with that and say, hey, look, this is who I am. I'm doing this because of my brother. I'm wearing my feelings on my sleeves. Let's go and see where it goes. And obviously he's a great worker and he has that mentality. I think that line right there is like, okay, how close do you really want to get to not copying? That's not the right word, but portraying Bray Wyatt in the right way.
I would say if he wasn't initially involved, you might have more of a point there, but because he was involved, you know, with Uncle Howdy and all that, there's an evolution. The Fiend, Bray Wyatt, you know, he evolved. Why can't Uncle Howdy evolve? To Jimmy's point, there's a way to change the name, whatever, you know, call him Unc. I don't even know. Get away from that a little bit. But I think it's just an evolution. And I think there is money, if you want to look at it that way, and that's probably not the nicest way to do it, but if you're thinking of, all right, is this guy going to be somebody we sink our teeth into, we're going to go with, that's going to come back to it is how are we going to make money? Well, there's masks, and the Bray Wyatt stuff did great numbers, like merch numbers and all that. Like, that was huge. And I think they're a wrestling family. They want to honor Bray. They want to honor Wyndham, but they want to be good at the job. And that's a big part of it. And you want to carry on the legacy. And part of that is, you know, making yourself valuable to the company in a way that Bray did. Bray was singular. Nobody was Bray. Bray, if there was anybody that was going to get past the aura of what Undertaker was, it was Bray. They didn't do that. They seemed like they were going to do that when Taker put him over at Raw 30. I thought that was pretty cool. So it's more carrying on the legacy. You got to be careful you don't get too hokey. And it's also a matter of, just because he's his brother doesn't mean he's him. You know, that's big shoes to fill. I hope they don't make it all about Bray and let it be a natural evolution of what that character or those characters have been. We'll see. They're kind of going slow with it, which I think is the right move.
Matt and Jimmy, I have to ask this. Matt, yeah, it's okay. Matt and Jimmy, I have to ask you all this. RJ, if you want to weigh into, I feel like this is a huge mistake. I really do. I feel like this is a huge mistake. It's like almost like trying to rehash the Undertaker. That can't be done. That can't be done. It's like almost sinful. Like,
I wonder if they asked Bo. I wonder if they asked him. You know, do you want to do this? How do you want to do this? You knew he was going to get the opportunity. He certainly earned that. He's been a good, you know, guy for the company for a while. He's done everything asked of him.
Right.
More often than not, he's made it work. Even, you know, comedy, low card stuff. So I think it's a respect to the family to say, hey, what do you want to do? What makes sense for you? And I could tell you, you know, him and Bray were thick as thieves. You know, when you'd see them doing this stuff, they were always together. You know, they loved each other very much, and they took care of each other in that way. That family's tight that way. That's why I think, Brian, there's a chance for it, because Bo was so immersed in it. And I know what you're saying. There's legacy acts and people trying to carry on the family name, and it doesn't work. I think at least he deserves a chance because he has been so immersed in it.
And gotcha. And the beautiful thing you said, Matt, was they were thinking going to the family and asking them what they would think. That's something that probably wouldn't happen under the old regime. This is what we have for you. Go with it. Mm-hmm. You didn't really have a choice, where now you can see that Hunter is very hands-on, but also taking feedback. And that was the beautiful thing of working with Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman was the same way. He was a guy that took feedback from everybody, and he turned it into magic. And I think they have the possibility to do it. It's just not how you're going to present it. Like you said, get away from that name and don't make it a copycat of Bray Wyatt. Make it something different. Make it say, hey, you know who I am. You know who my brother was. He was very scary. You were afraid of him, but in homage to him, be more afraid of me and what I can bring or do, or something along those lines.
Matt, this time I'm going to pull the curtain all the way back. I don't like to pull the curtain back, but slightly, but I'm going to pull it all the way back because I want everybody to understand how close me and Matt really truly are. Matt, I would invite you, or you would call me and say, hey, I could get to this place, da 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 da. And I think that I gave you the utmost respect as far as what most people would do for a friend, as far as backstage, as far as meeting and greeting. And the one thing that I was most impressed with you was that you didn't mark out. You didn't mark out, which made it very easy for me, because it's when you bring some stupid ass friend with you and they fucking mark out and they act like an idiot and they embarrass you. That's something you were very, very, very good at. And the reason why I'm peeling it way back is because me and you would sit there and talk backstage. We would run into all the guys. And then after the show, our most exciting point was we got to talk what we love about, like we're doing right now.
Yeah.
We would go back to that hotel room. What did Dave call my drinks?
Daddy soda, probably, was my guess. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Daddy sodas. We would indulge in some daddy sodas. We'd maybe get self-medicated a little bit. And we would talk and brainstorm. And dude, it was the funnest shit. I want you to just, I don't care how long you go. I'm just saying, could you elaborate how fun it was for you when you weren't in the business? You had nothing to do with it. You were a fantasy guru guy and everybody only liked you because you had fantasy guru.
Of course.
Experience.
I know that. Yeah.
No, okay. No, but I didn't. I love
it. But I know that though. But that's to your point. When I started talking, I didn't talk. I love wrestling. You guys figured that out quickly. But like to the amount I loved wrestling. But I knew you guys wanted to talk football. You were at work. You didn't want to talk more work. I was like, hey, why don't we do that? But that's a natural evolution of a friendship. Like, that's how it worked. I knew some people I could talk to more. And I got, you know, somebody like I never connected with was AJ. And that's just how it was. Like, he didn't hang out. So there was that. And, you know, I would connect with AJ more when we were in WWE together. But it was you and your dad and D'Lo. By the way, you've never lived if you ever played Cards Against Humanity with Earl Hebner. That's an all-time moment. And teaching him that game, it's just fantastic. But people would, they would see us hang out. And I just liked being around it. And I liked soaking it in. And I think, like I said before, being on the road with my dad, I understood how to stay in the background. I'll tell this story because I can. That first Orlando TV tapings we went to at Universal, you had the soundstage and all that, and you had those trailers. So it was like you and your dad and Stifler, and I think like Bubba and Bobby Roode had like the back room.
No, they had the suite. They had the suite in the back.
Yes, yeah. But it was but you guys were all in there. And this is like the second show I was at, maybe third. I was there that whole weekend. And Bubba was, they taped some angle with like Bubba and Bobby and something, and Bubba got knocked loopy. Like he hit his head on a truck or something like that. And he came back in, and I was like, there ain't any cameras around. He's hurting. Something happened. And I got the hell out of there because you could tell something was up. It was not my place to be there.
You probably got a random text from me. You might want to leave the trailer.
I said it. No, I did it. And you went, good job. That's all you said. Yeah. Like it was just understood.
Yeah, yeah.
I think night before, like Bubba saw me. He's like, who this? And you're like, he's with us. And that, by the way, was the word of gold because I was with you guys. And I also knew that meant something, that your name was attached to me. So I'm not going to screw that up because I like being around this. And I have entered, uncharted territory for myself. Yeah, were there at times I'm going, what the? Like, I've told the Flair story to a million people. me and you and your dad.
Oh, yeah.
Jenks were at the hotel in Nashville, and I had never met Rick before. I met him months before, remember?
Yes.
I met him months before, and he kicked me out of the, he kicked me out of the Orlando hotel. It was the night he got in the Hall of Fame because he didn't know who I was. I walked in after you guys, and he's threw
a
me
mean,
out.
He's
he
a was, mean motherfucker.
But he was right to do so because I walked into the court. You know, you guys had your area. So months later, you know, he's making an appearance and all that stuff. And we talked to him, and he comes back to the bar, and we were there the whole time.
Uh-huh.
And we were there for 7-8 hours. So the whole crew is there. We're just hanging out. And he had now seen that I was with the group, and some guy walked over, and he's like hanging on Rick, and Rick's like, he's like, oh, I do stuff. I help with the company. And he didn't. Like, he did nothing.
Right.
And Rick goes, very calmly, even though it had been hours since we had all been there, don't touch me. Get the F away from me. And just walk. Guy's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, what's... And they get him out of there. And I go up to Rick. I'm like, ah, that guy, huh? He's like, that happens all the time. I was like, yeah, you did that to me 3 months ago in Orlando in January. It's like, and he's like really apologetic. He's like, I did? I was like, yeah, but you didn't know I was with the Hebners. I'm sorry, man. I was like, no, it's okay, man. It happens. And he buys like anybody with an arm, you know, distance, a shot of SoCo, and he gives me one, and he gives me the fist pound with one of the two Hall of Fame rings. And he's like, how great is this? I was like, pretty good, Rick. And then fist pound shot, and he goes, woo. Nobody's around to see him in gimmick because he's not in gimmick. And like the next day, so I was like, hey, how's it going? I get you a beer. And he won't remember me now. I've interviewed him 4 or 5 times since then. But it was like, that's a moment where if I acted inappropriately before that, I don't get to share that. I don't get to be around. I got to do that because you guys let me in. And there's a way to act when you do that. And listen, if you're a fan, you want to go meet people, there's a respectful way to do it. I saw you guys deal with it. I watched, you know, a lot of the female counterparts I work with have to deal with it, and it sucked. Mm-hmm. And I know it's part of the deal in a way, but it's just the respect goes a long way across the board.
Yep.
And yep, it does. If you're trying to get in this industry, and, you know, I'm sure you guys get questions, just be nice, but be genuine, because we can smell when you're faking it and you're trying to get in somewhere and you're trying to use Jimmy because he's been in WWE or Brian because of where he... You can smell that out very quickly. Just be genuine and be nice, because if you really have passion for this, that'll shine through eventually.
Well, guys, can't work the worker.
No, you can't, Jimmy. Yeah, no. And you know what? I don't think we can end on a better note than that, in my opinion.
Yeah,
that's a hell of a story. That's a great story. Matt, we do want you to put out all your socials, all your upcoming stuff. Dude, the floor is yours.
Thank you, guys. First of all, I appreciate you having me on. I don't want to make you feel old, but I did watch you growing up, so it's cool to do the show with you now. But I'm like basically 40 now, so like I feel that too when I see like, oh, they're born in the double digits. Oh, I grew up with Raw 2004. All right, cool, gotcha. You know, I when I see stories like I was inspired by Alexa Bliss, I was like, no, sure, I get it, but I get it now. You can follow me on X and Instagram at the Matt.
Oh, whoa. Before you start, we do not use
Twitter,
that here.
There Twitter. Sorry. Yes, Twitter. I'm with
yes,
you.
Twitter.
Twitter and Instagram, the Matt Camp, and TikTok, the Matt Camp 123. Try not to steal your gimmick. I promise it's my birthday. and then I will be on Busted Open tomorrow, Thursday, from 9 to noon with Dreamer. And then next Tuesday, 9 to noon with Bully. So cool to be back on there. And I do streams. I'll have one tomorrow for Bleacher Report at 4 p.m. Eastern, previewing Backlash. So I've been doing a lot of stuff with them, usually like little half-hour things. I did stuff on the draft. I did stuff previewing Mania. I've been able to talk a little more AEW, which is cool to do with you guys as well. So, and I have some more things coming down the pike, but I can't talk about them just yet. So I'm glad I got to get this all kind of out and going and get out of the state media I had been doing for the last 5 years.
That's what we call, ladies and gentlemen, a teaser. And from a personal standpoint, it was great getting to finally meet you live and in living color at the Busted Open party. That was awesome. Matt, I couldn't be more happy for speaking personally to have you on today, because there are a lot of guys out there who claim to have a lot of knowledge in pro wrestling. You do have that knowledge. You really do. But you don't only have that knowledge, you have that understanding. And those are two different things, and that's the best part about it.
And that means a lot coming from you, Jimmy, and to be on your show, guys. I like that. I like being able to talk shop like this. It's pretty cool. But that just comes with experience, Jimmy. I wouldn't have talked this way on this show 5 years ago. I feel like you earned some of that stuff along the way. And even still, you know, getting to talk to you guys, even like why the tag happened in that six man, like that got my mind going. You can always learn because this company and or the the professional wrestling evolves all the time, and new things get over and old things get over. And you just have to keep your ears and eyes out. And that's why it's fun to talk about it, because the more you talk about it, the more you'll kind of get those creative juices flowing.
Well, Matt, you've been great. And I'm going to have to give you the obligatory that I gave you every time me and you saw each other. And you would say something that I thought was stupid. So here it is. Fuck you, Camp.
And that's a beautiful way to leave. Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it. RJ, I'm sorry you have to put up with Brian. Jimmy, you're wonderful as always.
Hey, Matt. Matt, last thing. We are out.
You are tuned to Ruffin It Up!
Another great episode, guys. Absolutely thrilled to have Matt on this week. A lot of those stories there, you're not going to really hear anywhere else other than this show. I was surprised, Brian, that it escaped my mind. I watched so much freaking wrestling. I forgot that how much he played a role there with TNA.
No, he was huge, man. And I'm very blessed to call him and have him as a friend. I really, really am. And he's a genuine guy. And if you ever really get to hang out with the guy, hang out with him, he's such a great dude. And he's so smart. He's so smart. And when he said the word sponge, he's a fucking sponge. He takes all the water in that motherfucker and does not wring it out. I can tell you. Just a great dude. I can't say any more about Matt Capen other than just I'm happy to have him as my friend and blessed.
Yeah, and as far as being a sponge, Bri, you're absolutely right, because you hear it. You hear it in the way he presents himself and what he talks about and how he talks about it. Man, he just didn't sit in the room in white noise in the background. He listened to everything, and you can tell.
Well, like you say, if you go back and watch a lot of his stuff that he did with the bump there in WWE, it's something that I hope that this show is compared to that. It's a conversation. It's not an interview. You're not looking at a script. You're looking at bullet points. You know, you're shooting the shit, you know, and I think that's what what his work has done, and it shows. But some other work, Jimmy, man, it's just your first time last week, I believe. The first time two Ref and Rants in one day. I almost fell off the chair I was sitting on. And I'm like, oh man, that must have been something serious. But man, you just absolutely killing it.
Well, I appreciate that. And you know, all my Ref and Rants, I'm speaking from the heart. I don't lie about anything. All my opinions are honest. And they come from the heart, because I believe this business. I told you guys a story a long time ago. Bruno Sammartino told me the best advice ever. He said, get out. And I'm glad I didn't take that advice, because he said, once it gets in your blood, it'll never leave. And it's still there. I still get goosebumps to this day from this business. And I love it. And I'm going to, hey, if I see something I like, I'm going to call it out. And if I see something I don't like, I'll call it out even harder. And sometimes it really pisses me off when I see stuff like that got me, you know, like you said, when do I do two rants in one day? Never. Because I think it's too much.
Busy wrestling day for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you know, I love this thing. I love doing this with you guys, and I love doing all the other stuff I'm doing. It's just, man, I'm, you know, still connected to the industry, and I love it. And you get to talk to old friends, and that's a cool thing. Like you said, Jay, we get to shoot the shit. It's not like, So back in 1987, you did this, you know, well, not too many guys we interviewed were in around in 87 working, but except for anyway, I'm dating myself now. Never mind.
So what are ways people can get to see those Ref and Rants, seeing you over there on Wrestling Inc. as well?
Well, the Ref and Rants are on my social media platforms, at Jimmy Corderas on Twitter, at Real Jimmy Corderas on Instagram, because I think somebody stole the Jimmy Corderas one. I don't know who that was, but it wasn't the real one. I'm the real one. And from Mondays to Fridays, you can catch me doing them there. They're only about a minute or so, a little bit longer, a few seconds longer. Just little critiques that I think would help, not to tear down and make things better. That's all I'm trying to do. You can catch me here every week on the Ref and Up podcast with you guys, just loving every minute of it. And on Monday nights after Raw and Wednesday nights after Dynamite, just chatting it up on Wrestling Inc. It's Triple J usually on Monday nights, and myself and Jack and whoever, usually George now, George Hermosa. We have fun critiquing again and putting over what we like. We talk about the whole thing. We talk about wrestling because that's what we love.
Man, Brian, and it's one of those things too that, you know, usually Brian is the guy that, you know, is going after all these, what do we call them? The trolls, Twitter trolls, whatever. Jimmy's been like that. I'm like, man, it's like, I go through that and I'm like, I'm scrolling for days. Cause it's like response. I'm like, man, Jimmy, I'm like, I don't go me wrong. I'm like, I agree with you, but I'm like, geez, Brian's staying quiet, and quiet Brian is, I don't know.
That's scary. Hey, when Brian's firing back, you should be afraid, but when he's quiet, be more afraid.
Well, guys, it's like this. It's like what we're doing here. It's called laying out. I'm laying out.
Yeah.
I am not going to entertain people on a daily basis and shoot bullshit. I'm going to wait till something is really got me triggered. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to go way the fuck off. You know what I mean? And I try to minimize that as much as possible, because I already see the tribalism that goes on with you, Jimmy. There's no need for me to have more. And I respect opinions, and that's what mine is opinion, but people can't respect opinions. And that's what pisses me the fuck off. Right. So I'll wait to give my opinion when I deserve to give it, when it's deserving to do. So whatever. I don't care. Honestly, I really don't care. And sometimes it's not even worth my time. I just don't like looking at my time. Like, I'm so busy. The last thing I want to do is open my phone and see a bunch of fucking Daryls on my fucking post trying to fuck with me. Like, you know what? Fuck you in your mom's basement. You know what I mean? Like, go away.
But anyway, I get it.
I fuck this to death.
The least they could do is put an actual picture of themselves or actual name and they attach won't. It to it, because they won't, because they don't have the balls to do it.
And half of them, and I'm not hating on it, I'm not saying anything. You have 30 followers. No one cares about you or your opinion, but yet you're going to sit here and bash me because I have an opinion. I have an opinion because I have experience in this fucking business. You don't. You know what I mean? But anyway, I'm done. At Twitter, at Baby Hebner, at Instagram, at Baby Hebner. This has been a great episode. Nothing's taking me down anymore. Nothing. I'm good. I am high up. I'm good to go. I can't wait for some more daddy. What does he call it?
Daddy sodas.
Daddy sodas. Ready for some more daddy sodas. And maybe Medicaid. Shit. Fuck it.
And hopefully for Jimmy's sake, the Leafs will win tonight, so we don't have to get a hot Jimmy.
Let me give you an update right now.
Last time I saw it was 1-1.
Yes, that was the update I got to. 1-1. Unless things have changed, but they're in commercial break right now, so
you never know.
1-1 is at the bottom of the first or the second.
It's 1-1 in the first period. So
we're talking hockey.
Yes, yeah. Hockey.
Oh,
it's a game they play on ice.
Oh,
not the other kind of ice. Never mind. I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to go there because right now in my mind I've got Grandmaster Melly Mel in my head. You know, white lines.
By the way.
Sorry.
By the way, that song you sent to me was classic. That could be the show opener from now on. I don't know. Let's see.
Which one? Which one? I've been trying to find new songs.
The second one.
Oh.
Anyways.
Nobody even knows. We're entertaining ourselves at this point. Guys,
we're entertaining ourselves. It doesn't even matter.
We could do Corderas karaoke another night.
We're just going to have one episode. You have seen, you like, three songs you sing and we bounce out of here.
Yeah. I got one more. I don't know if I did this one for you guys, and then we can close out on it.
Oh, shit.
Spend my days reffing hard on the go, but my hand on the mat is counting too slow. I can't wait to ref it up with my buddies tonight.
And on that note, we'll see you here next week on Reffing It Up.
Oh, fuck it. 1, 2, 3. Let's get out of here.